Hey, now we all know how important sleep is. It's a vital stage of human behavior that aims to re-energize the body's cells, clear waste from the brain, and support learning and memory. But with the rise of digital technologies, more and more people aren't getting the right amount of sleep. In fact, one in three Australians regularly struggle with their sleep, according to the Australian Sleep Foundation. So what are the effects of screen time before sleeping, and how can we change these sleeping habits? Now, I'm joined today by Dr. Chris Seaton, who is a pediatric and adolescent sleep physician at the Wolcock Institute of Medical Research. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Okay. So what are some of the sort of psychological initiatives that we can utilize in order to get sleep? Is it about developing a sleep routine?
Yeah, I mean, we can. We talk a lot about changing sleep behavior, and that starts, I guess, with placing a value on sleep. So, sleep, to some extent, is thought to be by some as a sort of lazy pursuit, or you know, you're missing out on something because you're sleeping. And so, prioritizing sleep is a good, I guess, first step in thinking about. You know, the benefits of that to our mental health, our brain, our body, and so on. And, you know, understanding that leads to, you know, trying to sleep for a regular amount of time most nights in order, as you say, to replenish the body and replenish the mind. So I think really, you know, you set up sleep as an endpoint to the night at a particular time, rather than saying, I'm going to do all these other things and then I'll go to sleep, because all the other things, as you say, we're all busy. Yeah. All the busy stuff leads to delay in bedtime, late sleep, tiredness, and so on.
I mean, we often live very busy lives. We have lots of people now who do shift work. So, I mean, you can just get a call up and say, oh, you've got a shift at X amount of time, which may not be particularly helpful for sleep patterns. Maybe we all get, maybe we're having examinations or an important meeting or something, and it's sort of pushed around and people get nervous about that. So I was wondering, what would you say are the best ways to sort of develop, to deal with sort of these sort of fluctuations, whether that be the sort of emotional fluctuations or just the timetabling fluctuations of shift workers or a lot of people in the gig economy?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, shift works are sort of a little bit of a different issue, but I think the important point you made is that when we've got things on or stresses or exams or, you know, work commitments, that those stresses can make us anxious. And what can happen then is the anxiety can stop us getting to sleep. So if we go to sleep anxious about something, the brain is highly wired, it's awake and it's stressed, and that's not conducive to sleep. So often what we do in that situation is do, I guess, what psychologists would call cognitive behavioral therapy. We just call it a pre-bedtime routine. It's a period of winding down, and we all know about this. It's been around for a long time. It's a period of wind down, a wind down routine before bed, in order to get rid of the stress, get rid of the anxiety, and prepare the brain for sleep. And if you do that in three or four things in a regular way, say, you know, for 40 minutes before bedtime, after 4 or 5 weeks, the brain learns that the pre-bedtime wind-down is associated with sleep. So it actually gets you to sleep quicker. The other thing that's important is to separate out the bed from other activities. We see a lot of young people who do, you know, a lot of digital activity in or on the bed. And that actually trains the brain that the bed is a place to be awake. So we remove all that activity out of the bed to another place in the house to train the brain to understand that the bed is for sleep. And we sort of coordinate lights out time with bedtime. So you've then got a bedtime which is associated with darkness, and that becomes an association with sleep. Those sort of strategies take, you know, they might take 4 or 5 weeks to kick in. So it's not an instant process, but it's really all about training the brain to sleep in a regular, relaxed way. The corollary of that too is if you do have an anxious persona or you're a bit depressed, not only do those symptoms delay sleep, but fixing sleep then reduces the psychological problems. I mean, sleep's a great therapy for depression. And we all know that if we sleep well, we're happier than if we sleep poorly. So it works in both directions.
Okay. Now, there are some. Can you tell us there are some sleep myths that about sleep with adolescents and adults? Can you tell us do sleep patterns do they change as we develop it from adolescence into adulthood?
I mean, what's interesting on the spread, you know, as we from babyhood onwards, sleep gets shorter. Babies need a lot of sleep. Kids a bit less. Through to adulthood, but the interesting part of that pathway is teenagerhood. And, you know, you might expect that, you know, from age 12 to age 18, the amount of sleep that a teenager needs would reduce, but in fact it stays level at about 9 hours, and then drops down to 8 hours somewhere between age 18 and age 21. But that static sleep need through teenager years is at odds with what we socially expect of teenagers. As they get older, they need more time because they have more homework, more study, more extracurricular stuff. So selling 9 hours of sleep to a 16 or 17 year old is a pretty hard sell. And we call that's a disconnect between what society expects and what science tells us. So the really, really sleep deprived people that I see, or the worst, are kids in upper high school, because they're the ones that are down on their sleep needs. Some of them are having 6-7 hours a night, and they need more like 9 hours. And as you know, school is a fixed starting time, so it's not like you can say, "Well, I'll sleep in and I'll miss school." So those teenage years are really tough. Adulthood, it really depends what you're doing, whether some people have flexible hours. Shift work is a hard gig. People who travel a lot get, jet lag, which throws their sleep rhythms out. So there are special managements and treatments for those sort of people. But for the everyday person, I think, trying to get 9 hours in teenage years and roughly 8 hours on average as adults will do the job.
And so just tell us a little bit, what happens to the body when we don't get enough sleep? What are the sort of major impacts on the mind and body in general?
Well, we call these flow-on effects, and every few months we read new research of various bits of the body or the brain of the mind that is affected by lack of sleep. And some of it won't surprise you. Your tiredness, depression, suicide increases. If you're sleep deprived, sense of humor, even obesity is more likely in people who are sleep deprived, poor moods, poor learning, crabbiness, crankiness, all those sort of things. But the most recent thing I read, which amazed me, is that this was a study in young men, teenagers, and men in their early 20s, and it showed that sleep deprived young men have smaller testicles and lower testosterone levels than well-slept young men. So the researchers who did this don't know the mechanism of that. They don't know how bad sleep or lack of sleep causes that, but they're now looking at whether that causes a reduction in fertility in men. So there's stuff like that that would, constantly surprises us. So we know that bad sleep just doesn't just make us tired. It has a lot of these flow-on effects.
Finally, is there any link between the amount of screen time before bed and the quality of sleep?
Yeah, there is. It's a pretty close link. So part of our management of patients with difficulties with sleep is to say, look, it would be good not to use screens in the hour before sleep and then not to have screens in the bedroom overnight. So the screens will do two things. They delay getting to sleep, so sleep loss that way. And then, as you mentioned, they reduce the quality of sleep. The blue light from screens signals the brain to be awake. So what happens with screen exposure in vulnerable people, not in everyone, is that not only do they get to sleep later, but they get to deep sleep. They take longer to get to deep sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, than the average person. And because of that, throughout the night, they get less dream sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, and more light sleep. So the quality of their sleep's impacted upon as well. It's a double whammy. And of course, that can just be corrected by, you know, the avoidance of screens in the lead up to bedtime and then particularly during the night.
All right. But finally, I mean, what about when you're waking up in the middle of the night? That can also, getting yourself back to sleep just in the sort of the keeping that sort of rhythm. Is there any sort of technique in that just to make sure that you don't sort of jot yourself back awake? I know that if you're thinking, oh, I've only got 4 hours or 5 hours sleep, and you have to wake up, you kind of have that worry that, oh, I'm not going to get back to sleep now.
Yeah, that's right. You those dead hours, particularly, you know, around 2:30, 3:30 a.m., where the problem then is that when you wake, your body, having already had some sleep, is not as tired as it was at bedtime. So therefore, the later you wake up during the night, the harder it is to get back to sleep. And that's compounded by, am I going to get back to sleep? Will I be okay for work or school tomorrow?